This is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
This is kind of a first for All Marine Radio in that the artist joins us here, and I got a call, I don't know how many weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, from F-18 Man, as you know him, Kurt Knowles is his real name, and he said, "Hey man, you got to have my niece on." I said, "Why do I got to have your niece on? It's All Marine Radio, like, what has she done?" He said, "Well, she's a singer and she's going on a USO show. A USO tour." And so I said, "All right, let's do it." But he left out a significant portion, and that is much in keeping with the spirit of All Marine Radio, that, you know, Peyton is somebody who's also dealt with trauma in her life, and we're going to talk about that. So first of all, Peyton Davis joins us from Nashville. So Peyton, welcome to All Marine Radio. Thanks for doing this.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm excited, and I feel quite honored to be on the show. My Uncle Kurt, well, F-18 guy or Rudy, as y'all know, introduced me to the show, and I think it's really amazing what you do, and I'm, like I said, feel very honored to be on the show, so thank you.
No, well, it is unique, and it's actually pretty cool, because people who, and I think you would identify with much of it, as somebody in your family's dealt with suicide, and so I think if you've dealt with trauma, you know, the things you would hear us say would hopefully be warm and familiar to you, because they're honest, and it's about coping and trying to be better, but those are heavy burdens that a lot of people that fight for the country get, because we fight, and then but they're no different ultimately than the burdens that people carry that have things happen to them here at home. And I know my sister's one. Your family is shares a burden. And so I think one of the things that helps us is trying to convince veterans that, hey man, get your shit together enough to begin to help other people. And as you begin to heal other people, you'll heal yourself. And so it's very cool to have you on, kind of in the spirit of all of that.
Yeah, definitely. I've just in the last month or so that I've been listening to the show, I've found quite a bit of comfort getting to hear your perspective and the perspective of the people and the families that you have on your show. It brings a lot of comfort to me and to my family to have this community of veterans and family survivors of those that they've lost in civilians. I think it's just a great way to connect and have that. I think it's awesome.
Well, and the other part is, you know, that we sustain each other, because I mean they're not easy experiences to learn how to coexist with, and we've learned, I think, the hard way that some people, if they don't stay connected, they don't do well. I mean, I interviewed somebody earlier this or last week. A parent said had just lost their son. He had come back from being in the army and in Iraq and Afghanistan. He took up. He got into the theater. Went to Los Angeles. Was doing well by all accounts, and then took his life because he was just struggling. And so. So they're heavy burdens, and so staying connected and all the things we talk about is important. But we've never had a country and Western singer on, So this is the first. I remember, you know, my friends from the South, you know, you'll talk about music. It's like, well, what kind of music do you like? And they'll say, I like both country and Western. You're like, really?
Yeah.
So yeah. How did, tell us about, first of all, we got to find out about you so we can know if we should take you seriously. What, born and raised where?
So I've moved a bit. I was born in Naperville, Illinois, but grew up in Southwest Florida, in Fort Myers, Florida. And then I moved when I was 17 to Austin, Texas to finish college at the University of Texas in Austin. And then about 6 months ago now, or just under 6 months ago, moved here to Nashville to continue pursuing music.
All right, so tell us how you got into music. So you're bombing around like any other kid growing up in Austin, Texas. How does life direct you to music?
Well, like I always say, I mean, it's all about who you know. I grew up classically trained. Both my older sister and I were classically trained singers, singing Italian arias and taking voice lessons back in Florida. And I met the guy who helped manage me here in town. His name's Corey Dearman. He actually got Gretchen Wilson her first deal and worked with James Otto and actually now is Kid Rock's manager.
Nice.
He's from Fort Myers. Yeah, he's awesome. He's from Fort Myers as well. There's a small group of us here in town that are from Fort Myers. And I met him through a guy who had produced my music back in Florida. So, and then through him I met James Cook, who played bass to Luke Bryan. He's now producing the new music I'll be putting out, and Luke's drummer, his name's Kent Fluker. They're awesome guys. So that's kind of how it was, like one door opened, and when I moved to Austin, I was playing three times a week, and then on the weekends, I had to convince my professors a lot of times that I was, in fact, really just sleep deprived from having played until 2 o'clock that morning, and I wasn't on drugs. when I walked into the class, and they were like, "Are you okay?" So, and then just moving here and trying to do the music thing here in Nashville and pay my dues. You know, they say it's a 10-year town, and just keeping the mindset that it's a marathon, not a sprint, and just playing as much as possible. So.
Yeah, learning to become a professional and hone your craft to be good enough to make a consistent living in it. What about so you're classically trained in singing Italian? What?
Just classically trained in general, and then being a classical singer, you learn to sing. I studied Italian in college, so I can speak Italian a little bit. But singing in other languages like German and French and Spanish. So, yeah, it's helped me a lot, I think, when it comes to voice.
Okay, so now you're doing that. You're interested in contemporary music. How did you select the country genre and not pop, rock, or some other genre? How did you get there?
I had always been a huge country music fan, always, since I was little. I mean, we would always listen to Shania Twain or even Gretchen Wilson and Faith Hill and, even Patsy Cline. And I remember my sister went to school for music. She actually just graduated from graduate school at SMU for classical voice for opera. And I watched her go through college. She's 4 years older than me. And I just said, I do not want to do that for classical voice. I mean, you can't really go to college for country music. So I went to college for corporate communications and sociology and did singing on the side and would just sing every week and was lucky enough to put out a single, the song Nowhere America that you played, to country radio and did a 3-month radio tour about 3 summers ago now from Texas up to Wisconsin and every state in between, and that was the biggest blessing, being able to meet the radio station programmers and the people who make our dreams come true in terms of playing music and you know, you're going to stations that aren't always in the biggest towns and meeting these people that just, I mean, they touch your life more than you could touch theirs, I think. It's pretty awesome.
So, all right, so that's how you get there. And then you've also, you and I were talking the other day, and you tried out to be on The Voice, which is of all those. Which is all though of all those, that's the one I watch, just so you know. I didn't watch it so much this year, but in years past, I actually told Peyton, if you come on and make fun of my boy Blake Shelton, okay, we're not going to do the interview. And she said she wouldn't. But talk about what's that like? I mean, it's a huge production. What's that like?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. I didn't make it on to the show, which I'm a big believer in timing is everything, and it wasn't right for me at that point in my life, as I was still in college. So, but it was really cool. You go and you go through a series of audition rounds. You do an interview in person, and they ask you a bunch of questions and kind of do like rapid fire rounds of this or that, or would you rather, stuff like that, and then you go through it. If you make it past that round, and then you sing a couple songs, and so that's kind of as far as I got. I made it past the first couple rounds, and then they tell you, okay, well, you've made it as far as you can thus far, and then they go and continue their auditions in other cities, and then get back to you with, you know, what I got, which was, this is it for you on your journey this season, and that's totally fine. Everything, I think, has worked out the way it's supposed to, but it was an awesome learning experience for sure.
What's the most nerve-wracking part about being on that? So if you were going to give advice to somebody who's listening, who's thinking about doing it, what's the most nerve-wracking part of it, and what advice would you give to people?
Wow. To me, I get nervous singing, but I really am more nervous talking than singing. So the most nerve-wracking part for me was the interview part. I kept saying, when they would ask me how many siblings I had, I kept saying four when I only have three. So that was kind of weird. I just got so nervous that I kept saying four. and then we had to start over. So maybe that's why I didn't make it on the show. But I don't know the accurate amount of siblings I have. But in terms of advice, I just would say, I mean, just be yourself. I mean, that's super cliche, but also, be prepared to answer any question, because they throw some random stuff at you. And with the singing, like, just make sure you know the words. I don't know. I just prepare as much as possible, really. It's like with any audition, I feel like. So that's all I got in terms of advice. I wish I had more, but.
All right. No, hey, that works. Talk to us about So now the path is you get out of school, and then you try to make a living as an artist, or you have a full time job and you do that on the side. Is that the path of most artists?
So when I got out of college, well, my junior year of college, all I wanted to do was quit school because I was so frustrated. I was playing a couple of times every week and on the weekends, and I just, and I know that all I want to do is make music, and all I want to do is help people by making music. And so when I was a junior in college, I was really frustrated. I told my mom, I just said, can I please just quit school? And she reminded me, she goes, Peyton, you, since you were like 10 years old, have always wanted to go to the University of Texas, and you're finally there, and you're going to, after your last year, you have 1 year left, just get it done, and then you can, you know, focus on what you want to be focused on. But, you know, you have to be realistic in it as well. And so after graduating, I got a job in IT staffing and absolutely hated it and was so angry. And I had stayed in Austin because I wanted to, while I was in school there, my mindset was like, okay, well, I'll stay for a little bit, keep playing shows here, get the experience of playing live here, because I knew that I'd be a much smaller fish in the pond when I got to Nashville. So I wanted to get as much experience as possible. I wanted to experience Austin post-college. And I just would cry to my mom all the time because I didn't want to be there. I hated my job. And so I quit. And I got a job doing medical software sales here in Nashville, which I absolutely love. And I do get asked this a lot in terms of, oh, well, is that your plan B? And my response is no. I mean, my plan A, B, and C has always been music. But I do need to have a job to afford to live and to pursue my dream. So, you know, I keep a picture that is kind of like a caricature drawing that a homeless man in Austin drew of me and the band that I play with there. And I have that posted up right next to my monitors at my desk at work. And it just is a reminder that every day, you know, it makes it easier to go to work now doing medical software sales because you feel like you're actually making a difference in what you're doing. And so it's pretty awesome, the company that I work for. But it is a reminder that, you know, this is one stepping stone towards that dream. And, you know, going on radio tour, that was a huge step for me as an artist. But I can't forget all the little steps it took to get there, too. So that's what I try and think of with where I'm at now in terms of having to have a full-time job while still trying to pursue music. Is that this is just a part of the process.
My guest is Peyton Davis. She's F-18 Guy's niece. She's a singer. She's living in Nashville. She's going on a USO tour. So we wanted to talk, bring her on and talk about that because she has an interesting story, as well as dealing with trauma like a lot of people who listen to All Marine Radio. So you got this pretty interesting life going on, Peyton. At what point, do you begin to deal with suicide in your life?
5 years ago is when my dad took his own life. And it was the summer before my senior year of high school, and it was 3 days after my little sister's 11th birthday. And that's kind of when everything changed, for our family. And, I would say that the only things that really got me through that would be my music, my faith in God and my family. I'm lucky to come from a family that the lines of communication, I mean, I don't think there's anything that we couldn't talk about as a family. Communication is everything with your family when it comes to talking about suicide and, you know, depression and mental illness and post-traumatic stress disorder. I think that communication is everything in every part of your life. And, that's 5 years ago. And it's crazy to say that I think that is where we're at. I mean, because to me, it's yesterday. Right. To my family, it's yesterday.
So as you guys kind of went through that, I mean, what are the things that you've you've learned? Do you talk about it when you perform? Do you reach out to people and share that, or do you not share that? The first question is if that subject were to come up and we were to talk about it, and I didn't know anything about it, but I was worried about it, or maybe it had just happened in my family very recently. What advice would you give me as somebody who's had you know, not somebody in your family, your father, right? The strongest man in the world, right? When you're a kid, there's nobody bigger or stronger than your dad, and how devastating that has to be for a family. What do you tell people? Do you give any advice in terms of, you know, how do you get through it? And to coin a term that we use here, how do you learn to coexist with it? Because that's hard. That's incredible.
Right. I think, I mean, my first piece of advice is to keep talking about it. Whether it's to your family or your friends or acquaintances. I mean, I to keep talking about it because I think it's something that people don't talk about, which is, you know, I keep saying that's something I love so much about this radio station, and what you do is you talk about things that people are uncomfortable with, and that's part of the problem, mm-hmm. is that people don't talk about it because they think it's uncomfortable for me or it makes them uncomfortable. And I just think that, you know, at first I was so angry and I was sad, and all I wanted to do was bury it and just, you know, I remember saying to my mom, well, I don't want to be the girl that goes back to school and is known as, like, the girl with a dead dad. And, but now, I to keep talking about it, because I think what changed for me and what I've learned is that every part of my past is what makes me who I am and, you know, kind of lights my fire for what I want to do with my life. And not even, like, in spite of that, it just simply is, I am a product of my past. And I think the most important thing that I've learned is at the end of the day, I'm a survivor of someone who took their own life, and that's something that I'll carry with me forever, and that my siblings and my mom and my dad's parents will carry with us forever. But at the end of the day, this isn't something that happened to me. That's something that happened to my dad. That's something that happened to Carlos Lopez Jr. That's something that happened to my Uncle Kurt's friend the same day that he saw him. It didn't happen to us. We are grieving and all of that as a result of it, but that, you know, this whole, people hold on to this, oh, this happened to me, or this victim mentality, but I don't agree with that, because it didn't happen to me. I didn't experience that loneliness or that hopelessness or that depression that other people have felt. And so I think once you get past the victim mindset, and once you get past the feeling of this happening to me, you can really make a change and move forward and help others deal and coexist, like you say, with the experience. That to me has been the biggest.
That's hard, because a lot of people, for instance, I can tell you, in our military families, you know, the wives don't sign up for, I didn't sign up for this. I didn't sign up for you to be crazy and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't have a choice in that. I kind of had got drug into this, you know, and I would imagine to say, you know, and I don't even have to imagine. I've heard people who've had somebody in their family commit suicide say, you know, it's so selfish, you know, there's nothing I can do about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah, and I was there when it happened. And I remember so many conversations immediately after it happened, being so mad at him, at the world, but thinking that it was the most selfish thing that a person can do. I mean, it really, but that was the first thought that went through my mind. But at the end of the day, I find the ability to coexist in knowing that and believing in that he must have been in so much pain,
right.
So much pain, that he would take his own life and leave a family behind. And I feel like I can coexist with that, because I know that he's no longer in any pain.
How long did it take you to get to that spot? Because, you know, I like that you use our terms, coexisting, because, you know what, when you talk to people that have lived through trauma and deal with it, they don't talk the way other people talk. You know, other people will say things, because they've never been there, hey, you need to get over this, you know, and time heals all wounds. And you're like, good one. I want to see the amount of time that heals this hole. So they say stuff, but, you know, I think to me, the things that have been, that resonated most with me are the people that say truthful things to me. And those are things that, you know, hey, you're not going to get over this. And then the follow on to that is, you're going to learn to coexist with this. And it's like, you hear that and you're like, whoa, who is that? Who said that? Because that totally...
Well, and I think Sorry, keep going.
No, because that totally makes sense to me. Because people that tell you, you know, time heals all wounds, it's like, have you ever been through anything like this? Well, no. Okay, then you need to shut up, first of all. And then the person that says, hey, you're not going to get over it. It's gonna reach out and grab you. And I always say that, it depends some days, and I'm sure you're the same way, except I say this facetiously, but I say it depends where I am in my menstrual cycle, because some days I can handle it okay, and I can talk about it. Other days the thought, I can feel the tears in my eyes and I won't be able to speak. And I can't tell you why, you know, and I'm sure you go through the same experience. Some days you're able to talk about your dad, and other days just the thought of it, you know, all of a sudden you have tears, you know, rolling down your cheeks and you can't speak. And so.
Yeah, I mean, if you had asked me this question, if we were trying to have this conversation 5 years ago, but probably even three, I couldn't talk about it.
Right.
And then what changed for me was having to, when I went on radio tour, that was something that we didn't, when I went on radio tour, when you talk to station programmers and it's in my bio, I mean, it makes me who I am. It's why I want to make music. It's why I want to do a USO tour, because I want to help people who have been through similar experiences. And so for me, I had to talk about it because I knew I was going to be asked about it. And I will never forget the first person who ever asked me about it. And we were live on the air, and this woman, we were in Alabama, some radio station that I can't remember the name of, and for what I'm going to say, I won't say her name or anything, but I remember she just looked at me from across the table and was like, so tell me about how your dad killed himself. And I just was like, what? Internally, I was prepared to talk about it, but I wasn't prepared for that question, I don't think. And I remember looking to my left at my guitar player left and just was like, help me. but I had to do it, you know? And so that was a big part of it for me, but also being comfortable talking about it with people at radio stations, but with my friends. Like when I was in college and joined a sorority, I would get so frustrated at how people my sorority sisters, who's the most important thing in their life back then and probably to this day, some of them, you know, their most important thing in their life was what date event they were going to, or what party they were going to, or what they were wearing, or what they were going to get. It blew my mind. And I remember countless conversations with my mom saying, like, I can't be in this environment because it is so frustrating to me that this is the highlight of their life. Like, there are people dying, and, like, but that's the thing. You can't empathize and really try and live another person's life, not even just put yourself in there, say like, oh, well, if I was in your shoes, but to really have that kind of empathy for someone, you'll never experience that until you love something or someone more than you can love yourself. And that usually doesn't happen, or people usually don't realize that until they have experienced that kind of loss of a family member, of a parent, of a sibling, of a son or a daughter. That kind of heartbreak that usually doesn't, unfortunately, you don't get that kind of ability to have empathy until that happens.
No, you know, it's interesting. I always say when you meet people like that, it's, you know, my thought is God bless you, because, you know, you live in this clean world that I wish I was still living in that world, but I don't live in that world anymore. And God bless you. Stay in that thing for as long as you can, and hopefully you can stay in it forever. That you will live this whitey tidy life, and it'll be beautiful, and tragedy will never darken your doorstep, and you won't have to know the things that I know and experience. God bless you.
Yeah.
Although they do piss you off, I will grant you that. But you know, now, I mean, I think most of us, you know, your uncle and all of our friends, I mean, you just smile and you think, God bless you, man. God bless you. Stay right there. Don't step out of the bubble.
I hope you don't put this upon anybody. And I remember, you know, the girl that I lived with for 3 years in Austin, she was older than me. Her name is Alison, and she will forever be someone that I consider to be a sister, a friend, one of the closest people in my life, because she and I used to talk about this as her best friend, growing up. Middle school, high school, college best friend was murdered. And I had never heard someone put it this way, but now it's really the best way that I can even describe how I felt. And hearing her say it, she was like, I feel sometimes that I live in, it's like time stops in my world, and I feel like I'm living in a glass box. And somehow other people around me in life, they can still go up. It's like nothing has, if the world just continues to go on and life continues to happen, and I feel like I'm living in slow motion because I'm just numb. And I remember when she said that, I was like, that's exactly how I feel. Because I look at everyone around me and my surroundings in general, and I feel sometimes on the days where it's really hard and all I want to do is cry, I feel like I'm living in slow motion. And I don't, and it's hard to get out of that. But then that's usually when I pick up the pen and start writing, because that's how I get out of it.
Well, and I think that's the significance of, for me anyway, you'll never get over this, because when I have those days, I'm reminded that, like, he told me this would happen, and it's okay. This is all part of my menstrual cycle and this thing reaching out and grabbing me that I'm learning to coexist with. And and we say out of this experience has come all these unmarine-like sayings, right? And another one is, be gentle with yourself. This is hard. This is not easy. And when you do have those difficult days, be cool. Be gentle with yourself. And it's okay to have those days. Now, that is so unmarine-like. It's like, I can't say that. Come on, yeah. That's like so lame. It's like, that's not us, but it's the truth. It's the truth, and it's the way you have to do it, and it's the way you have to learn to be able to accept yourself, that I'm going to have these crappy days. I've learned how to get out of them. I've learned how to limit them. They don't do to me what they used to do to me most of the time, because I'm better at it, and I've learned to coexist with it. But all those little things are... what happens when trauma darkens your doorstep?
I think the best example I can give you about how I coexist with the trauma and being a survivor of someone who took their own life, and it's morbid, but this is how I cope with it. When people, because in Nashville, and even when I was living in Austin, I do a lot of co-writing with other people.
Right.
And so... in times when, and I laugh about it because it's so morbid to me that I even say this to myself and very few other people, but when I'm up at night or even during the day and need to write because that's the only way, if I can't fall asleep because I have anxiety, I get up and I start writing about it because then I get my thoughts out and then I can fall asleep. And then my mom will ask me, like, oh, did you write with anyone today? Or someone will ask me, oh, did you write with someone? And I think to myself, yeah, I wrote with Beth today. And I picture myself like sitting at my table, or even when I'm writing in bed, like just sitting next to Beth writing. And that's how I coexist, because you can't bury it and ignore it. You just have to learn to coexist with it and realize that it's just a part of your life, and it makes you who you are, and it's, for me, what fuels me to do what I do to help others.
I'll tell you a funny story. And I think this happened when my father-in-law died. And, and your kids are dealing with death for the first time. So I was talking with one of my kids once, and they looked at me and said, well, how do you handle death? I said, I pretend I'm not dead. And they said, what? I said, yeah, I just pretend I'm not here. They're like, really? And I said, yeah. I said, death sucks, man. You can't go back and say, I love you. You can't hug them. You can't do anything. There's no do-over. There's no reasonable thing relative to it. And so I just, I don't go there. I just pretend that they're not here and they're gone. But I don't like to think about that. And he said, really? And I said, yeah. I said, so look, don't be afraid to pretend. You know, there's not one way to cope with life. You know, and some things are hard. And you find ways to work around things. And so it's interesting. It's interesting. We both like to play make-believe. That's all right. It's all right. It gets you through. My guest is Peyton Davis. She's a singer. She lives in Nashville. She is the niece of F-18 Man. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you'll hear another song that Peyton wrote coming out of the break. And then we're going to talk about her USO tour. So we're going to find out about that. And she's got a whole bunch of, like, interesting facts about her life, to include, believe this or not, involvement in JROTC, yes?
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So we're going to find out what the hell that's about coming up next. Don't touch that dial. More of Peyton Davis coming up next on All Marine Radio. Right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
All you veterans, listen up. This is Bob Nielsen, former Marine and founder of 100 Entrepreneurs Project. Turner Construction is looking for veterans with real-world leadership experience to join their team of professionals.
Hold on, Nielsen. Are we talking about a job or a career?
Yeah. Turner Construction is a great company with global opportunities for veteran leaders who are looking to start professional careers. I know. I returned to Turner after I got back from Vietnam and retired after 50 years. I had a great career traveling the world leading teams of Turner employees as we built incredible projects.
Are they looking for me to have construction experience, Bob?
Absolutely not. Turner is looking for leaders who have led under pressure. We want leadership. So if you're led in Iraq or Afghanistan or any other contingency, Turner Construction is actively looking for you.
So, a career with competitive pay, good benefits, and a company seeking veteran leaders. That's what we're talking about.
Bingo. We're on the right road when a grunt can understand it. Good job, Mac.
I appreciate that there, Nelson. How do I get the ball rolling? What do I do?
Just email your resume to jobs@allmarineradio.com, and I will personally contact you and we'll begin the process.
I love it. Turner Construction is looking for veteran leaders who are looking for careers to join their veteran-friendly team. Email Bob Nielsen at jobs@allmarineradio.com. Let's do it.
I'm good, but I have a story, and I don't know where to start.
I'm good, but I feel alone in a crowd.
I'm good, but the past keeps coming back.
When the service member or veteran in your life says,
I'm good.
Are you really listening?
I'm good, but I can't get out of bed.
I'm good, but I can't sleep.
I'm good, but I feel overwhelmed.
I'm good, but I don't feel safe.
I'm good, but I still have nightmares.
I'm good, but I don't need any help.
I'm good, but I don't feel anything anymore.
I'm good, but I can't live like this anymore.
I'm really not so good, but are you ready to listen?
Suicide prevention is everyone's responsibility. Listen to the veteran or service member in your life. If you are in crisis or know someone who is, call the Veterans Crisis Line and Military Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255 and press 1 for free 24/7 confidential support.
We all have the ability to touch the lives of those around us. Moms, dads, neighbors, teachers, friends. These are the people who are always there to listen when we need to talk. Though their actions may not always be monumental, they are always felt. To someone going through a difficult time, a text, a call, or a visit can mean so much. Reach out to the veterans in your life today. Let them know they're not alone. One simple act can make all the difference. That's the power of one. If you're a veteran in crisis or know one who is, visit veteranscrisisline.net for free 24/7 confidential support. Or call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1.
Hi, I'm Colleen McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean and feel the sting of letting go of all hope and so be made. Of this heartbreak, I wanna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I'll scream, yeah.
The song is called Hurt. The artist is our guest today, Peyton Davis. First of all, Peyton, where do people get your music?
Oh, so you can get my music on, I have an album out called Country Road that you can get on iTunes, or I have a select few tracks, one of them being Hurt and Nowhere America, and there's another one called Better at Drinking. Those are all stream on Apple Music and Spotify.
Wow. Wow, tell me about Hurt. What's Hurt about?
Hurt was a song that I didn't write Hurt. Hurt was a song that was pitched to me 3 years ago, one of my first times ever coming to Nashville, and it was right after my dad had passed, and I had just started writing music,
mm-hmm.
and that was a song that my manager had pitched to me, that was written by a woman named Alex Klein. And he just said, I think that this is what you need right now. And I listened to the song and I just instantly started crying, because for me it was about how for so long I had been burying my feelings about losing my dad and not wanting to talk about it and not wanting to, you know, like I said earlier, be the girl with the dead dad that everyone was afraid to talk to. Or, I mean, people would say, they would apologize for saying the word dad in front of me. And
yes.
I just completely stopped talking about it. And that was, as soon as I heard that song, it was like floodgates. It just was everything I was feeling about how I just wanted to scream and be and feel hurt. Even if just for a moment. And so for me, it's a song that when other people hear it, I hope that they know that it's okay to feel that pain. And I think it's important to feel it, because I think not only is it important to feel it, but it's important to then, like you say, learn how to coexist with it and to talk about it. And that's what that song is for me. That was really the first thing I heard after my dad died that I was just like, wow, that's how I feel.
We're going to ask you about some of the pieces of your life that people should find out about. Then we're going to talk about let's talk about the USO thing. So how does the USO thing come about?
So the USO tour is something.
Wait, hold on. I just want you to know, we love the USO. No matter where we go, for instance, when we went to Afghanistan, you know, we leave Southern California, we fly to Maine, right? Everybody's wiped out because probably the scariest part of the whole thing is when you say goodbye to your family and you don't know if you're going to see them again. And most of us have done it more than once, and we know that they know that they may not see us again either. So everybody's trying to be strong, and it's not working out very good for anybody. And then you leave that night, and it's this huge emotional, difficult night for everybody. And then when we get together, it's almost like this, and everybody faints, and you're sleeping. You get off the plane in Bangor, Maine, and there's people from the USO there. It's like 3 a.m. And they have, you know, they have cell phones. Hey, anybody want to call home? No, she's sleeping. I don't want to bother her. But some people do. Yeah, I want to talk. And they're there, and you're like, who are these people? And then, you know, you get back. You're off the plane while they refuel it and do whatever they do. You get back on the plane, and now you fly to Dusseldorf or Sofia, Bulgaria, or someplace like that. And, you know, lo and behold, there's USO people there. Like, who are these people in Dusseldorf, you know, that are giving us cookies and telling us the bathroom's over there and asking if they want something to read? And it's USO people. And they're wherever we go, they're there with a smile. And it's the organization that I give money to, along with an organization called Semper Fi Fund, because of all the different places they've been in the world, when there's essentially nobody else around, and they're there waiting for you. So just so you know, we love the USO, and it's a big part of when we go and when we come, and you know, and then even when you're traveling around the country, there's USOs in airports, and you can go into them and get something to eat or go to sleep, and it's an awesome, awesome organization. So how do you cross paths with USO?
Yeah, that's incredible, and that's exactly why I want to be involved. And I think, so I learned about the USO when I was in high school, when I was in junior ROTC. And
okay, hold on. Now we got to tell the junior ROTC. So tell us about junior ROTC. Okay, girls who sing like that, it's not what we normally think about as being in junior ROTC. So you're in junior ROTC. You're also a shooter, right?
Yes, I was on marksmanship team.
You're on the marksmanship team. You're a figure skater and a swimmer.
Yes, yes.
So, like, when did you have time to do shit? You didn't, like, how did you ever learn how to sing if you were being a jock and if you were in the JROTC?
I would wake up very, very early and go to early morning swim practice at, like, 5 to 6. And then from, like, 6 to 7 or 7:30, I'd just skate. And then go to school, and then go back to the rink and skate, and then sing throughout, like, in the middle of the day, we'd have singing lessons. And then at the end of my school day was when I had junior ROTC, and it was the Army branch that I was in.
What is up with that?
It was the only branch that they offered in the county that where I went to high school. So, so in our town, if you don't want to take PE, you can take ROTC. And so my brother did it and my older sister did it. They were both in our junior ROTC as well. And I, at that point, hadn't gotten over myself and was like, I don't want to do that. You'd have to wear a uniform every once a month and do inspections and, you know, I didn't want to do that.
Right.
But then my mom was like, no, you should really do it. It's been really rewarding for your siblings. And, I mean, I would say that to her after everything, like, with the swimming and all of the figure skating things and practices. I was like, I'll do that. And now, in retrospect, I couldn't be more thankful. I mean, my mom is the definition of superwoman. I mean, I think about how I want to become a mom, and I'm like, I pray to God that I am a fraction of the person that she is, because she's just incredible. But I could talk about her for hours. So, anyway, when I was in high school, I joined the junior ROTC, and I loved it. It was so much fun. We had the biggest tower that we would rappel off of and do the zip line, and I came to love my uniform and, you know, joined the marksmanship team, which was super awesome. My instructor, Sergeant Roseberry, and Colonel Upkins, and Master Sergeant Scott, they were awesome. And actually,
so you wait a minute. You love those uniforms? Army uniforms suck. Could you imagine if you would have been able to wear a Marine uniform? Because our uniforms are smoking hot.
I wouldn't say I loved wearing it. I'll say I could try it.
You could say you love it. You just, I mean, have you ever seen like Kurt's Marine uniforms?
Maybe. I don't really think so.
Really?
No, yes, I have. I'm sorry. I went to a military ball out in San Diego. I do know. I haven't seen that.
That's a fairly decent party, yes?
Yes. It was a lot of fun.
Okay. All right. I'm just saying, like, we are like the fashion, like, leaders in military fashion. So if you, like, were head over heels for that Army nasty stuff, you would have never left. You'd be like a colonel today or something like that in the Marine Corps.
But through junior ROTC though, I had more singing opportunities through junior ROTC than I think I did through the choir that I was in, because I was singing at Veterans Day, singing events that were in town, Memorial Day, military promotion ceremonies, high school military balls. I was constantly singing at different events, and I loved it. That's actually, I will say, when I was in high school, people asked me what my most embarrassing moment in life is, and I think every person that's an artist has at some point in their life, one time, royally screwed up the national anthem, and I did it at a junior ROTC event when I was in high school, and I stopped. I don't think I stopped crying for like 2 weeks because I was so embarrassed. But
you see it happen, and you're like, I've heard it's not the easiest one to sing, and I've heard it's this happens. But when you see it, you're like, what did she do?
It was the most mortifying thing I've ever.
So what happened? Do you want to reenact it? Do you want to reenact it? What happened?
No, my mom would get so mad at me.
What do you mean your mom? So, she's not here.
No, I know, I knew. She's going to listen to this and be like, hey, you're so not my kid anymore. But I was at singing for a high school promotion ceremony.
Right.
And I had done it the year before. I had done this so many times. And got up there and I was singing and... Right. I just remember looking at the audience, and I was like, oh, my God, I'm singing the wrong song. I have to stop. So I just stopped singing towards the very end. And I looked around, and I looked backwards, and the woman standing behind me on stage kind of looked at me and moved her hand like, okay, hurry up, like start singing again. What are you doing? And I thought I had put the microphone down at my side, and I didn't. And I was like, oh, fuck. The whole audience just erupted in laughter, and I finished this, like, the guy behind me started singing the rest of the song, and then I finished the song and sprinted off stage. And you think it was a moment where I remember seeing those movies where someone's out of breath and they have to give them a brown paper bag because they can't breathe.
Right.
Well, I lived that. I had mascara running down my face and I couldn't breathe, and my mom comes back and shows me. She goes, oh, fuck, really? You couldn't have just coughed or something? And she goes, why did you stop singing? And I was like, I was singing God Bless America. I was singing the wrong song. She goes, no, you weren't. But that's the problem. You get two in your head, and then you screw it up. So, yeah.
Wow. You know, that's a great story. And I'll tell you what, the best part. Well, see, you know what? You could have just, like, stopped and froze. And everybody's just looking at you. But when you drop, oh, fuck, that makes it awesome.
It was so bad. But they let me do it again the next year, and everything was fine. And they didn't, you know, blackball me from the JROTC singing community. So,
there you go. So give me the number one thing you took away from, other than that scar, your time as a member of Army Junior ROTC. What was the number one takeaway? What did it do for you as a person?
Well, for me as a person, I think all it did was amplify my desire to serve our country. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, the best way that I know how to do that is with music. And that's, like I said, how I got introduced to USO, because I remember my instructor saying, hey, you know, because I knew I wanted to pursue music, and at that time I had started recording some stuff, you know, outside of school, and they said, you should really look into this, you know, and see if there's any way you can get involved. You know, they said, like, I don't know if this is for celebrities or whatever, but you should see how you can get involved. So at the time, I never really thought twice about it because I was under the impression that it was just for celebrities, and I didn't, you know, with moving and going to college and all that stuff, so I just kind of put it on the back burner. And, but it was something that never, ever left my mind, or, you know, I don't want to sound ooey-gooey, but, I mean, it really never left my heart. Like, I think about it, and I just have never, I mean, and for the last couple of years, I have seriously talked about it so much in terms of just one of the things I'm so passionate about doing. And I think it also stems from the question that I get asked all the time, which is, well, what's your goal? Do you want to be a superstar? Like, do you want to be a rock star? Are you trying to make millions? Blah, 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 when it comes to pursuing music. And me and my Uncle Kurt asked me the same question at our family reunion recently. And I was like, you know, I would love to make a living making music. I mean, that's the dream.
Right.
But to me, it's more than that. It's, I want to do what I can with the gift that I've been given. I mean, and it's something so minuscule, I know, but to be able to give back to the people who risk their lives for us and to bring, you know, to make them feel like there's a little piece of home with them, you know, to just do something that I can and to give back to them. That's what it's about for me. I want to serve my country the best way that I know how, and for me, that's with music. So I put in, that's when I started my application to the USO tour. So I have recently submitted that, and you have to submit a certain amount of video clips of you singing and all that kind of stuff. And then it takes a month or so or a month or two in the approval process to find out if you can do that and go overseas and or to different places in the country or even just within the U.S. to do that. So I'm still in the process of waiting for approval, but I have put in my USO application, and I'm hoping that that's something that I can do, especially next year, to go overseas and just do what I can to give back and, you know, help people.
The all right. The and we've I'm trying to think if I've ever seen. I don't think I've ever seen a show. I remember Kid Rock. And I think it was Kid Rock and Ted Nugent came.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, there's not that many people that actually get to go see them. Because when there is a war going on, everything else continues and some people get to go see them. And then I can't remember, there was somebody else that was huge at the time that came. And, it might have been Toby Keith, might have been shown up on another time. And, But they're very cool. But like I said, the USO, I think if you talk to anybody who's spent any time in the military, it's an organization that's always there, and the people are just awesome. They treat you like it feels like you're home a little bit, even though you're not.
That's awesome.
Yeah. No, it's a great organization. All right, we're gonna find out more about you. Okay. All right, competitive figure skater. What's the best part of being a competitive figure skating? And don't tell me getting up early every morning, because I know that sucks. So, best part of being a competitive figure skater is?
Oh, just the losing yourself in the moment. I mean, that's what it is for me. It's my, other than music, it's my escape. I mean, I don't compete anymore, but I still skate every week. I actually am one of those strange people that love getting up in the morning. I'm obnoxiously chipper in the morning. If I sleep past like 7 o'clock, I feel like my day is wasted. So, I actually love going to the rink super early in the morning, having ice myself and just, just getting lost in the stadium. I mean, it's like whole world is gone, and it's just you and I. And like, it, for me, I feel like people talk about when they take a shower in the morning, they're like, oh, that's my time to think, and that's my time where I have my thoughts for myself. And for me, that's when I'm on the ice.
All right, talk to us. You ultimately became a master sergeant in your JROTC unit. What was your?
I did.
Okay, so of all the things you did, other than sing, okay, what did you enjoy the most?
I would say either marksmanship team or when we would do all the rappelling off the tower.
Okay, let's talk about marksmanship, because we talk about marksmanship here. So what kind of rifles, air rifles, what did you guys shoot?
Yeah, they were the what are they called?
Whatever.
I'm totally blanking on.
It's all right. It's all
right. But yeah, they were the air pellet.
Okay. All right. So of all the different shooting events that you did, what was the strongest event for you?
It was prone.
What?
The prone position.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
All right. That's the easy one. Come on, man. The prone. Everybody shoots well in the prone.
Okay. Well, I don't know.
so no, but that's not too many people shoot on marksmanship team. So that's cool. What about so you're a swimmer too. What event did you swim?
I was a big freestyle person.
Whoa.
I loved it. But I was a big freestyle person. My sister was an amazing backstroker, but I was always a freestyle person.
Freestyle, that's like, they're the sprinters. They're like the big dogs on the swim team, yes?
It was, I don't know that I would say big dogs, but definitely the sprinters for sure. I'm a big sprinter. Like when it comes to running too, I'm the same way with that. Because I played soccer and I just now, I think it screwed me up and I can't run long distances without wanting to puke. So, sprinting all the way around, on land, on the ice, in water, that's me.
All right. What did you get your degree in at the University of Texas?
Corporate communications and sociology.
Really? Why? Mm-hmm. What do you do with that?
Well, obviously nothing. I'm a singer. But I loved it. I remember, like, I wanted to go to the University of Texas to go to the business school. And I didn't know that as a transfer student, you will not be accepted to the business school at the University of Texas unless you've completed, you have to do a certain amount of hours. They call it in residency there. So if you surpass 60 hours of transferable credit, they won't accept you. And I had 72. So that's why I got my corporate communications, which is like a business portion of the communications school. And then, but then I did sociology. And I remember when I was picking that, my mom was like, what are you going to do with that? And I mean, everyone told me that, but then there's a woman that has been my mom's best friend forever. And we know her through church and through the high school because she had sons that went to school with my older sister, and she looked at my mom and was like, do you know your daughter? She will talk to anybody. She loves to talk to people. She loves to learn about people. And that's really what sociology is all about, is the study of a society. And I it was the most interesting and most rewarding major with a bunch of the classes that I took. I thought it was awesome.
Wow. I hope you don't mind. I want to go back to the subject of suicide, because
okay.
You hear it spoken about. Would you give advice to people that know people that maybe have lost a mother or father, and their children? Right, as you said, you don't want to be that girl that nobody, you know, wanted to say the word dad in front of, because when they said it, they then had to turn and go, ah, what did I just do? Right. So, what advice would you give people in terms of approaching it? How do you approach it?
Well, in terms of approaching talking about it and just being comfortable in that situation, I think, I will say for me, it took some time to be able to talk about it without crying. That was a big thing. I mean, there was a long time after, gosh, I remember we were singing something, and I was at a singing event of some sort, and my mom really wanted me to sing Hurt, and my dad's parents were there, and I was like, I cannot sing this song. I can't. I just can't do it without crying. There was another song I sang that was a cover song that I couldn't make it through the song in the middle of an event without crying. And it was the same way when I would talk about it to people.
Right.
And you hit, I think, it's like what you said, you're never going to get over it. It's never going to go away. I mean, it's been 5 years for me, and it feels like it was yesterday.
Right.
Some days, not all days, but some days. And I think just learning to talk about it and finding a way. That's just such a hard piece of advice to try and give, because
So let me ask you this. So should people do anything other than act normal?
I think that it's okay to not, I mean, it's okay to know that it's okay to cry and have emotions about it and not feel bad about it. And not be afraid that you're going to make another person uncomfortable. Because, I mean, obviously you want to be self-aware and cognizant of what's going on around you. And, you know, you don't want to make someone else feel bad, of course. But at the end of the day, like, you're allowed to be upset about something. And so to feel comfortable in that and to feel comfortable. I mean, there were so many times where I'd be like, oh, my God, I'm going to cry right now. And I would say to people mid-conversation, I'm probably going to cry, but don't freak out. Don't freak out. It'll pass. And that happens, and then, you know, people would apologize. Like I said earlier, people would say dad in front of me, and then be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. And I would just say, it's life. I mean, that was always my response. I got to a point where that was always my response. That's okay, it's life. It's life. Because there's not really anything else you can say. But now I'm to a point where I've gotten past past the mourning, and I'm you know, now on to the wanting to help others, that it's easier for me to talk about it. But for those people still struggling with being able to talk about it, I would say that is my biggest piece of advice, is knowing, one, that it's okay to feel, and if you're in the middle of a conversation, not to be ashamed or feel badly that you may or may not make another person feel uncomfortable because you're crying about it. And to talk about it, to find people, your family members, your friends, and others who have been through similar experiences, to talk about it. Because that's the only way I think that you can continue to coexist with it, is knowing, like, okay, this happened to me, and this happened in my life, but I can talk about it.
Okay, what advice would you give to the rest of us? So, should we just be our normal selves and be prepared to put our arm around somebody and say, hey, it's okay, and not change our behavior, just be normal, because that's what's best for them, is if the rest of us are all normal, don't avoid things, don't act any different, and what advice should we act different? Or should we act different based on our perception of where they are? Which is kind of hard, but what advice would you give the rest of us?
Well, I agree with that. I think that it's so hard that... I think that people treating others differently because of their perception of what that other person's going through only exacerbates it.
Right.
I think then it creates this awkward, like, oh, I don't want you to be uncomfortable, and then it's, no, I don't want you to be uncomfortable, blah, blah, blah. Like, talk to them, because people who have gone through this already feel like a zoo exhibit to some extent. And you trying to, while it's probably with the best intent, wanting to make sure that they're okay, treating them that way, I think only makes it worse.
you know,
and treating them differently than just, hey man, what's up, you know, because I think it's not even, because I could see how someone would say, oh, well, then you're just pretending like it didn't happen. And I disagree with that, because I think that it's just, at the end of the day, people want to know that they are still, you want to have that normalcy that you used to have in your life when something that traumatic happens to you. And so, you know, you want to keep everything else in your life as normal as possible. And when people start treating you differently because they think that you need that, that tends to make it worse. At least for me, this is just my own experience.
I will tell you, my kids, when they go places with me, I'll see somebody that has, prosthetic legs or arms. And, you know, a lot of times you'll see either something else they're wearing or a tattoo or, you know, a baseball hat or something that says they're somehow or maybe affiliated with the military. And so, or even if they don't, and I look at them and I think they're military, I'll walk up to them and say, hey, where'd you get those? And they'll look and they'll say, at the VA. Like, well, yeah, but where did that stuff happen? Oh, in Afghanistan. What province? In Helmand province. What year? What city? And all of a sudden you're there like, I was there. I wasn't there. I was south of you guys when that happened. And it's crazy how this stuff happens. But my kids cringe, or they used to, and they don't anymore because it's normal. And then after we're done, it's like, hey, well, you know, look, that's normal. In my tribe, we don't care. I mean, it's not anything awkward. It's not anything awkward. Like, your pain is not awkward in our tribe. There's nothing that you're dealing with that the rest of us aren't dealing with, too. The situation relative to your trauma is unique, just like everybody's is unique. But you would find a home when somebody looks at you and says, like, you don't know if you're fucked up, and you say, kind of open your eyes really big and say, eh, and they look at you and say, well, you are, but just like the rest of us. And you kind of laugh a little bit, and you say, yeah, I am. This is like my tribe. These are my people. They understand me. They know about the ups and downs and all of that. And so, you know, to me, but again, what do they want? They just want to be treated like everybody else. And then if they're struggling, you'll know it. And there's nothing wrong with putting your arm around them and giving them a squeeze and saying, hey man, it'll be okay. Hang in there and whatnot. And so I was curious because I think that, you know, on the backside of trauma, what people I think crave is normalcy. And when you know right. When you know people are tailoring the way they are, it's like, oh, I'm failing in this because now everybody's adjusting, you know, the way they are because of me, and I don't want that. And so, anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. I think it's the most. I mean, I experienced that after my dad passed away, and people would, you know, say all these things that I think they thought I wanted to hear, and then I just remember one of my friends was like, all right, we're going to go fishing. And it was like, yeah, all I want to do is go fishing. That's something I would normally do.
Fishing sucks, man. I can't believe you like fishing. It's for morons.
Okay, well, we're not going to go there.
Come on. I mean, who fishes? Like, throw a line in the water, and then you stand there, and then hopefully the fish jumps on it? Come on, Peyton. That's not a sport. Although your uncle...
I never said it was a sport. I just said it was fun.
Oh, okay.
Love it.
Your uncle likes it, that's for sure. All right, Peyton, let me ask you a question. So, you know, we talked about your career, and we talked about suicide, the USO tour. We talked about you screwing up the national anthem in high school, being a master sergeant in your JROTC unit, and a whole bunch of other athletic things you've done. What haven't I asked you... in the last hour that you want people to know, either about you, about your music, about why you want to do the USO tour? What haven't I been smart enough to ask you that you want people to know?
Well, you've asked a lot. so.
That was the right answer. Okay. You're going to
get.
Thanks
a lot. But
you're
going to
get invited back. That was the right answer. Okay.
I would just say, honestly, the most important thing is communication. And this is something that it's said time and time again, but it's the most important thing. And this is one thing that makes me so passionate about music and connecting with others. And it just is the centerpiece of why I want to do what I want to do with my life. And, in today's world, we live in a society where because of technology, we can be so connected, but I feel like we are more isolated than we've ever been. And it's because there is no human interaction. And I think that is so huge and so necessary because, we live in a world, and I think in this world today, there's this idea that you have to do life alone. Like, you have to do it yourself. Like, you don't need anyone's help. And I think it's just the opposite. Like, people need people. We weren't meant to do life alone. I mean, there's a reason, you know, you use the term tribe mentality. This is my tribe. Find your tribe. All of that. I think that is so important to have that community and to have that human interaction and to pick up the phone and call someone. I mean, not even while sending a text is great and that's a step in the right direction, call someone. Let them hear your voice. Hear their voice. Or if you're in the same city as them, go see them. See their face. See the way they smile and the wrinkles on their face and the way that their nose flares when they talk. Stuff like that. I mean, people need human interaction, and I think that is something that our society is severely lacking, especially when it comes to the idea of loneliness and depression and just being there for other people who need it most. The best thing that you can give to someone, a resource that, you know, you can never get back in this life, is your time. And if, you know, people give just a little bit more of their time to have that human interaction and communication, I think the world would be a much better place.
All right. Peyton, you don't mind if in the future, when the subject of, trauma associated with suicide, you don't mind if I give you a call and bring you back on and you can give us your thoughts on it or whatever. I hope you don't mind if we do that.
Not at all. I would be honored.
Awesome. All right. So, and then you're going to let us know with whatever happens with your USO stuff, and so we'll keep an eye on that. And then we might just whenever. Now, you're going to release another song, another album coming up, or tell me about that.
I will be releasing another single. It's the first one that I co-wrote it with a woman named Sam Watson, and it's the first song. I mean, I write all the time, but this is the first one that I've written that's just, you know, I don't have kids, but I imagine that for me right now in life, it's what having a baby would feel like.
Really? I want to have a baby so bad, I'll listen to it. Because that way, like, women, you know how women, like, they say, oh, like, what do you know? Like, you never had a baby. You don't know anything. It's like, I want to be able to say, no, 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 I've had a baby. I'm the first guy that's ever had a baby, so shut it, girlfriend. Yeah, so I'll listen to the song. Maybe it'll help me.
So this year I'll be releasing a single that is, like I said, it's my baby. I've been working on this song and waiting for the right time to put this song out and the right time and for myself and in life and getting to Nashville and all of that, so I'm super proud of it and excited for it. I am very, very lucky for the people who have played on this record, this track, the musicians that played on it. I mean, they are just the most incredible musicians, but the most incredible humans as well. And so I'm just really, really proud of it and excited. So once it's out, I'll let you know when it's going to be released, so you can definitely take a listen.
All right. Just so you know, when you become, like, big time famous, if you don't come back and talk to us, we'll talk shit about you, just so you know.
Rightfully so, but I promise.
I'm just putting you on notice, okay? We will definitely talk shit about you. All right, first of all, Peyton, thank you so much for coming on and doing this. And first of all the best of luck to you in your career. And I just so you know that you are a member of the tribe. If you're linked to F-18 Man, you are a member of our tribe. Plus, you've been a master sergeant, so we have to let you in. So, whenever. You know what? We'll take it. We don't like it, but we'll take it. And if there's anything that we can ever do for you, as you kind of make your way through life and you cross paths with people with trauma, please don't be afraid to hesitate. We're givers, and we want to share with people who've gone through trauma. So if you see anything that we could participate in, we would be more than delighted to do that. And so maybe you can be a little bit of an ambassador for us as well as we seek to give back relative to people dealing with trauma. So thank you very much for doing this, and all the best of luck.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a pleasure. And I just want to say, I've sent you my social media contact and link. So for anyone listening, if you want to chat, if there's something on your mind, you know, anything, don't hesitate to reach out to me either. It would be an honor to talk to you, and this has been an absolute pleasure. So I'm incredibly grateful. I wish, when you said I was a part of the tribe, I wish you could see the smile on my face, because it's literally hitting both sides of my room right now.
It's a cool tribe. It's a cool tribe. And if you ever go to a party with a lot of people that have PTSD, they're crazy parties too. They're really fun, but they're crazy, and they get kind of rowdy. So there are certainly parties you don't want to miss, trust me.
Perfect.
All right. You'll find all the information she just talked about, all her social media, will be on the podcast post on the website. So if you just go and you click on it, you'll see all kinds of interesting information about Peyton Davis. Peyton, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. More Ball Marine Radio coming up next, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network.
You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Wait, that's the wrong bumper music. Yeah, Peyton Davis. How about that? Stud Muffin.
I wanna walk into a cold, bitter ocean, feel the sting of letting go of all hope and soak in me. Of this heartbreak, I'm gonna drive fast till I break down in nowhere, so I can finally cry these tears when I reach there. I'll scream, yeah.
The song's called Hurt.
So I'm gonna sit here and watch this cigarette burn. It hurts.
How about where she screws up the national anthem? How hilarious is that? You know, and just as funny is her mom coming backstage and giving her, really? Fuck? Really? That's all we can think of? You could, like, totally see that, right?
Wipe your lips off my pain.
That's good parenting. Right? Bad parenting is going back and then hugging them and saying, it's okay. Right? Good parenting is going back and getting pissed at them. Like, what did you just do?
Yeah.
No, my thanks to F-18 Man. He doesn't do much right, okay? But on occasion, he pulls a diamond out of the rough. And, that's why, you know, to me, in fact, it's recorded, right? So I'm sitting here listening to it. I think that dude in that murdered his wife and kids, they just blow his brains out. What a piece of shit, man. What an absolute piece of shit. Yeah, just take him out of the field. Done. Go away. Anyhow, yeah, predators like that, and don't give me he's crazy. I don't want to hear any of that. No, you know what? But one of the things, and again, it's kind of something that has happened a little bit out of the blue that I would never have predicted. That I would never have predicted that that kind of, and it's happened to me twice in like the last 3 weeks. Is having experiences with people that weren't in the Marine Corps, and you're just talking about trauma, and they look at you and they say yes. It happened with Luke's fiance Emma, and it happened with Peyton, right? And so to me. And it fits perfect into our tribe, because who gravitates to our tribe? People who live purpose-driven lives, people who tend to be about something bigger than themselves, and they're not afraid of a challenge, right? And so, in my opinion, the challenge of trauma is: can you get your? And I'll say what. And Peyton's a good example of it, right? Yeah, Stud Muffin, Master Sergeant Stud Muffin herself, in spite of her mother flaming on her. But she's a good example herself, right? I mean, I didn't ask her about it, but I've since found out about it. I mean, she's the one that went and tracked her dad down. She did that. Okay? And so, when he committed suicide. But her, and I don't want to say healing, but her road to coexistence with that is taking her to a place where she's helping other people. And you can hear it in her voice in the interview when she talks about that, how healing that is for her, right? And so to me, and I did not envision when we started All Marine Radio, that All Marine Radio would be an exporter of this. I saw All Marine Radio as kind of focused inward on our tribe, doing what we can to get that number that sits at 20 in terms of veteran suicide, to get that number to come down, right? And to help people live better lives, okay? That's the vision, post-combat related mental health. Right. So really, when you broaden the lens, it's post-traumatic mental health. Right. And I will tell you this. I'm not sure that the word combat isn't debilitating, because I think it sets up for us this thing like, oh, well, we were in combat, so therefore this. Well, hey, your trauma is no different. Like I said, if you want to play whose dick is bigger with trauma, let me introduce you to my sister. Right. Nothing that any of my friends or has seen or done is larger than the trauma that my sister went through. And so to me, when you realize that you're in a much wider fraternity, and then again, you're a purpose-driven person, that can be a aspect of your life. And it can be a great aspect of your life where you help people. And you know how you feel? I say this thing about the Grinch, right? where the Grinch hears the Who people and his heart gets big. You have that experience every time you help somebody. And I was telling this to Luke. You know, you're going to be somebody in your community. You're a veteran, right? You fought for this country, right? And you're also going to be somebody who's dealt with PTSD. Do you know how many, if you want to, do you know how many speaking invitations that would come your way to talk to young people? And you can talk to them about trauma and about coexisting with it, about being gentle with yourself, about if you're dealing with, you got to stop drinking. Because it doesn't end well if you don't. Right? You can be an exporter of all the good things that we know about. And I honestly, it's becoming the coolest part of All Marine Radio, because you cross paths with people like Peyton who is doing that on her own, right? And our paths just happen to intersect because F-18 guy, right? Does something good for a change. Yeah, how about that? So, no, it's honestly one of the coolest parts of and unexpected parts of All Marine Radio. Had no idea that this would that this kind of thing would happen. And I will tell you what, I mean, it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And again, so what does that mean? It means that there's a healing aspect. And I liken it to, you know, you've seen what Jake Wood has done with Team Rubicon. What do? They send veterans into areas that have been ravaged, right, by nature. What about sending veterans to... P. Davis, Master Sergeant, ROTC, Army type, ugh, HUA. But how about sending people to help other people that have been impacted by trauma, right? And just that steadying hand of somebody who, and again, I think that because, you know, veterans who have fought, for whatever reason, they're held in high regard relative to PTSD. That makes sense to me, but I think that's the way it is. When you put your hand on somebody's shoulder and say, hey, man, it'll be okay. All that you're going through is normal. So you can go ahead and exhale. And these are the things that you're going to deal with. And you introduce them to their menstrual cycle. They might not even know about their menstrual cycle. But when you tell them about their menstrual cycle, they'll look at you and go, oh my God, that's me. That's what happens to me. Some days I'm okay, and then some days it just kicks my ass. Yeah, welcome to normal. That's okay. Although now I want to talk to Rudy's sister-in-law. Peyton was moderately overscheduled as a child. What the hell? I wonder if her mom thought she was going to get in trouble. Yeah. Swimming, figure skating? Hello. Singing? Yeah, classical singing? Maybe she was like, her mom figured she was going to get in trouble. No, awesome interview though. And wish her all the best of luck. For a couple reasons. One, she's F-18, guys. F-18 man's niece. So, she's part of the tribe. So, therefore, we wish her luck automatically. But her story will help others heal. And it's amazing. It's amazing. You know, you do these, and I'll read you an email that I got in the middle of this thing, right? In the middle of this thing, I missed the beginning of the interview and will catch it when the show repeats. Peyton is an inspiration. What an amazing young woman it takes to persevere through such a traumatizing event. To hear her say that she knows her father in death is no longer suffering floored me. She is dropping some serious knowledge on us about coexisting. Thank you, Peyton, for sharing. Thank you, Mac and Rudy, for setting this up. So, again, it's amazing. Like, this interview will go out there. And it goes, and you never know who's going to listen to it. You never know, you know, somebody who might listen to it and say, oh, that's Peyton Davis. I've heard of her. Let me, you know, I want to hear what she has to say. Who's living with some version of trauma, who all of a sudden hears it in a way that they've never heard it before, and whose life has changed forever. And that's the coolest. That's the coolest part of this. So, and then I'll finish the thought. During the interview, I picked up the phone. A buddy of mine from Iraq, Gary Static Klang, call sign Static, F-18 guy. He was our air officer in Ramadi for the division in 2004. Awesome, awesome guy. I wouldn't say this to his face, but he's a great dude. He sends me an email and says, "Hey Mac, my brother." My older brother, it was a machine gunner and got out in 1988, and he's done work with opioid addiction, and he does work, flies all over the country doing interventions with families. And so I called Chris, and I was talking to him, and we were talking about, you know, this special kind of very direct way that veterans have in dealing with this kind of stuff. He said the general public needs that because they get this flowery, you know, overblown stuff where to hear somebody say, you're never getting over this, the best you're going to do is learn to coexist with it. He said, boom. And I said, yeah, from my company, Gunny, high school graduate. That nugget of gold. He's like, that's awesome. So he's going to come on and we'll talk about, you know, his life in the Marine Corps, getting out of the Marine Corps. And, it's interesting. I was talking to him about, I mentioned the drinking thing and I said, hey, just to warn you, you're going to hear on Marine stuff. And he said, like, and I said, you know, PTSD and drinking, got to stop drinking. He said, look, trust me, I know it. It's either going to end one of two ways. Either you're going to stop drinking and you'll get your hands around it and you'll learn to coexist. Or if you keep drinking, you're going to go down a dark road that you don't want to go down. You know, that quite frankly often ends in suicide. So it's not hard. It's a fairly easy choice. I was like, whoa. Whoa. So, we should end on this. Master Sergeant P. Davis. Peyton Davis to the rest of you. Figure skater, swimmer, mother, scheduling from hell. Classical singer, now country western music artist. Aspiring USO entertainer. Niece of Kurt Knowles. And coexists with trauma on a daily basis. And very much on her own, is becoming an exporter. So, congratulations to her. Because not everybody gets there. I'll have the interview up in a few minutes, so if you want to listen to it, if you missed it. Gunner will be back on Thursday. Tomorrow, Grant Newsham's going to join us. We'll talk about China and Korea. Your lips.
church pew, staring up at Jesus, and for once I'll forgive you. I swear I will mean it. I'll finally be free.
Her name is Peyton Davis, Master Sergeant Stud Muffin. You can find her music on iTunes, Google Play Music. It's not hard to find. She's not hard to find. All that stuff will be up in the post. It'll happen here momentarily. So, what a cool interview. My thanks to Kurt Knowles for introducing us. But it's very cool. That'll do it. Thanks for listening. Again, I would tell you, stay away from the news. I do it professionally, but what a shit show. Honestly, it's awful. But if you have to, I guess. And I cover some of it in hour one. And then if you just don't touch the dial and you came in late for the Peyton Davis interview, that's up right behind that. So have a great day on a Tuesday. All Marine Radio is over and out. Hey, one more thought. Part of living the high life that this song talks about. Comes from helping other people. So get your shit in one sock and help other people.